Good Monday morning. This is Larry Warren along with John Wells instead of Doug Wells this morning. The Wells twins. One is on vacation this week. I'm kidding, John. Of course, the Wells are no relations, but they're both great hosts. So John Wells is taking Doug Wells' place this morning on Mountain Money. And we welcome you to the program, and it's going to be a fun one today because we've got an interesting top end guest in Charles Gasparino, the author of Circle of Friends: The Massive Federal Crackdown on Insider Trading, and Why the Markets Always Work Against the Little Guy. And excuse me, Charlie is a well-known financial journalist, currently on the Fox Business Channel and other venues, and we will be talking to him about the markets, insider trading, and all of that.
And then next up, we'll be speaking with Vanessa and Michael Dobson, Pop Art Snacks, which makes and sells delicious organic gourmet popcorn with very humble beginnings. They started out making popcorn in their kitchen, and now, well, every store in this area, you're going to be able to find it. Anyway, we'll be talking to them next. And then we will be speaking with Mary Roberry, author of Grab and Go, excuse me. And she has an interesting product. She's going to talk to us about how to get our important documents ready in a flash with tornadoes, hurricanes, fires, those sorts of things. She has 25 years experience in this type of business, and we look forward to speaking with her.
So we will continue with Mountain Money after this.
This is Chris Robinson with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we've been supporting KPCW since day one. Prudential Utah helps buyers and sellers with their home needs, whether it's a condo, single-family house, or undeveloped land. Our agents know our community and our local market. More information can be found at pru-utah.com.
Hi, this is Jan Williams. KPCW is recruiting for the Volunteer Air Force. It's open enrollment for volunteer DJ opportunities. If you're interested in being a part of your community and KPCW, contact me, jwilliams@kpcw.org. The KPCW Volunteer Air Force wants you.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and Charlie Gasparino is a busy guy. He's all over Fox Business Channel and writing and so on, and we got a hold of him a minute ago, and he said, call me back in 3 minutes. I think he's on Fox Business right now, and we're going to get him multitasking in a couple of minutes to talk about his book. So in the meantime, we want to apprise you of a new feature coming up on the Public Affairs Hour. JW and Lynn Ware Peak, for the last year or so, took over from myself and other rotating guest hosts for Community Voices. And you've been doing Community Voices now, JW, for better than a year. But you've decided recently to change the show. And I'm enthusiastic about it. And if you're a regular listener on Thursday mornings to Community Voices, you'll know that the subject matter's been changing a little bit lately.
It sure has. Just in the last 6 weeks, we've had guests on neuroscience, on nanotechnology, expensive internet access. We've talked about dinosaurs, Darwin. We've even spoken about Einstein. We've had a lot of fun with it. So we decided to start a new show, Cool Science Radio, which is understanding science and technology in a complicated world. We think, Larry, if we can understand it, then our listeners will be able to understand it. And so we're pretty excited about it. It starts on September 5th.
And it's actually been starting already, but we're officially launching Cool Science Radio right after Labor Day weekend that next week. And We're thrilled to add it to the lineup. We started that show out, Community Voices, as a current events show, and it turns out we cover current events so well with our local news hour in the morning that we didn't really have any fresh local community events that we weren't already talking about. So it's going to be fun to bring a new subject into it. And the thing, my initial concern when we talked about it was getting it so that regular listeners will be able to understand it. And you're going to translate it down so that we all get it, right?
And we're gonna figure this out together. Yes, absolutely. And there's going to be a lot of moving parts, not only a couple of guests, but we're going to be answering questions as people post them on our Facebook page or call in. So we're going to have a number of features. And as you know, Larry, just in this general area with the University of Utah, with the astrophysics department, with the nanotechnology department, with all of the engineers down there, with all of the technology people that live and work here in Park City or in Salt Lake City. And let's not forget that the Hubble telescope is being replaced by a telescope being built in Utah.
Indeed. So tons of cutting-edge technology here, and we will tackle that on our new show, Cool Science Radio, on Thursdays. Right now we have Charles Gasparino on the line with us. He's senior correspondent for Fox Business Network, where he reports on major developments in the world of finance and politics. Well, he's written for the Wall Street Journal, Newsweek. He writes a column for the New York Post and Huffington Post and contributes to the Daily Beast and has written several books, The Sellout, Blood on the Street, and King of the Club. This journalist knows Wall Street backward and forward. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you. Let's talk about your latest book, which is already climbing the bestseller list, Circle of Friends.
I wish your lips to God's ears. It's doing pretty good. It's on the Gasparino bestseller list. How's that?
Yeah. So tell us just broadly the theme of this book, and then we'll get into it more in depth. The subtitle is The Massive Federal Crackdown on Insider Trading. So it sounds like an insider book on insider trading. But then the second half of the subtitle says Why the Markets Always Work Against the Little Guy, which is kind of a different theme.
Well, I mean, the book is about insider trading, about, you know, you read about it a lot right now. They're conducting a massive, I think we're at the final leg of it, and that's what the book kind of pointed out, that, you know, one of the biggest white-collar investigations following the financial crisis had nothing to do with the financial crisis, oddly enough. It had to do with insider trading, and people are going to jail for, you know, 10 years or more because of this stuff. And this is maybe the biggest crackdown on white-collar crime maybe ever. I mean, you never want to say ever because, you know, I've only been covering business news for the last 20 years, 25 years, and, you know, Rudy Giuliani, when he was U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, did a pretty big crackdown back in the mid to late 80s, culminating in the early 1990s with Michael Milken going to jail and Drexel Burnham essentially imploding, closing down. That was pretty big, but this rivaled that in terms of size and scope and how many people have been in jail. And so what I did was I did sort of an autopsy of this investigation. And what the sub-theme is essentially about is simply that, you know, even though they're cracking down on this stuff and, you know, insider trading, I try to explain what it is and try to be intellectually honest about what it is and it's whether it's damaging to how damaging it is to the average investor. The markets, the way they're laid out, are always stacked against the average investor. And I would say, no matter, you can crack down on insider trading all you want. If you're the federal government, and this is the reason why they allegedly crack down on this stuff, they say, well, it makes everything fair for the little guy. The markets are never going to be fair for the little guy. The little guy should not be essentially playing in the markets. Now, that's an odd thing for a business reporter to say because I want people involved.
Yeah.
But I'm saying playing, trading, you know, getting involved with the stuff that that when you listen to a certain business network, the guy goes buy. That is not what you should be involved in. If you want to, everybody's got to invest. everybody's got to be, the markets aren't necessarily evil, so to speak. You got to understand them, but you shouldn't be like trading against these guys. I think there's this whole sort of notion that you can trade against Steve Cohen.
Let's talk about the little guys a little bit later. Let's first just get into inside trading. That has been the stock and trade of Wall Street and other exchanges prior to Wall Street, probably going back hundreds of years,
yeah.
Hasn't it? Right.
I make the point that, you know, the oldest crime might be prostitution, but this might be the oldest financial crime.
Yeah. So take us through what the Feds have been doing here in the last a dozen years, the time period in which you've been talking about.
Well, let's define what it is, right? Yeah. Insider trading is trading on material, non-public information, meaning information that could affect a stock, and you know it before the rest of the world gets it. The classic definition of insider trading, which is when a company insider, right? This is known as classic insider trading. A board member, a CEO of a company, knows earnings are going to be lousy for his company, so he trades, sells all his stock, or knows earnings are going to be great, so he buys it. You know, he trades on information that is material. He's an insider, and it could move the stock, and he benefits. He gets a benefit that the public doesn't have. The federal government would say, meaning the Justice Department, the SEC, would be, you know, that information actually doesn't belong to the CEO, right? It actually belongs to the shareholders. And the CEO shouldn't be trading on that information before everybody else, because the CEO is actually stealing that information if he trades on it before it's publicly released. And he's getting a specific benefit. That's classic insider trading. That sort of definition has expanded over the last 10 years to include average people. If somehow information gets sent to you, misappropriated to you, where a middleman might sell it, steal it from the company, like an analyst might know about something and he tells you that the stock is going to go down, the earnings are going to be lousy, or if you actually have a friend there and he gives you a tip, he or she gives you a tip, that friend would be misappropriating that information to you. You would be essentially stealing information from the company. So that's where we are now, and that's why so many people are in jail in the hedge fund business, because the information was essentially misappropriated to them. The either middlemen, sources, you know, through bribes, you name it, and it all occurred over the last I guess 8 years since this crackdown began. Or 7 years since the crackdown began, but most of this stuff that we're seeing now is the latter sort of variety of insider trading, not the classic variety.
And Charles, you make the point that the assumption early on was that this was more the boiler rooms, the small boutique firms that information was being moved around a little bit, but
right.
It's a lot more extensive than that. And to help with the definition, to sort of bring this completely into focus, can you talk a little bit about sell side analysts and what that is and how that plays a part in all of this?
Sure. A sell side analyst essentially is was the analyst that worked at a Wall Street firm, and he would put a buy recommendation on a stock, right, or a sell recommendation on a stock. That business got very unprofitable, particularly for Wall Street and the analyst him or herself, and around 2002, 2003, when they started cracking down on that sort of stuff and on the use of investment banking revenues to basically pay these guys off. Can you hang on 1 second?
Sure.
We got to get out of here.
Okay.
I mean, someone just walked in my office. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Where are we again?
Sell side analyst.
Yeah. So essentially, those analysts, they couldn't get paid, and they went into they became independent researchers, and they found this booming business known as hedge funds. And those hedge funds didn't demand information; they demanded market, just any old information. They demanded market moving information, which often crossed over the line into insider trading.
So. Investigators, FBI, and Justice Department nailed a few, like Raj, and you better help me with the
Roger Rodham.
The Galleon Group. And
he's not a sell-side analyst. He was, let me correct you. He was an analyst early on. Then he started a hedge fund.
Yeah. And others, the McKinsey, the guy with McKinsey, and so on. And, you know,
he's one of those classic middlemen. He wasn't quite an analyst. He was a board member of Goldman who misappropriated inside information about Goldman's earnings to Rajaratnam, who traded on it.
Okay. And those guys have been convicted and sent to jail and discredited,
right,
and all of that, and maybe had their fortunes stripped away from them or whatever. But you say the feds have failed to find anything against the king of them, Steve Cohen, with SAC Capital, a hedge fund in Stamford, Connecticut.
Yes. That's the biggest, probably most profitable, one of the biggest and probably the most profitable hedge fund around. They do more trading than anybody on the street. And the feds have essentially believed that SAC Capital, this is what the feds believe, I'm not saying I believe it, but
sure,
the feds have essentially believed this was a hotbed of insider trading for many years. They've charged or brought charges against something like 9 people there, which is more than any other place. We should point out the guy in the middle is Steve Cohen, you know, at least on paper, considered one of the greatest investors of maybe all time. They have not charged him with insider trading. They have indicted his company. Okay, they believe it's, you know, they liken it to a criminal enterprise. So they've indicted the company. The company denies the charges. Steve Cohen has been charged civilly with the failure to supervise some of the alleged miscreants that worked there. But that investigation is ongoing. And as the book points out, Circle of Friends points out, I basically trace when this guy came on their radar screen. And, you know, listen, there are great investors. I mean, Warren Buffett's a great investor. But I'm telling you, on paper, there is no better investor, I believe, than Steve Cohen. This guy's record is unmatched, at least on paper. And what the feds will say, the reason why it's unmatched is because they believe, you know, he created a system that skirts the laws.
And he continues to work at what he does to this day.
In a much more scaled down version. I mean, that fund has made major problems since the indictment.
And so people are running from that fund,
yes,
perhaps.
But his personal fortune's in there. It's $9 billion. I mean, he could theoretically trade that. But, you know, if they indict the firm, it's going to be very hard. It remains to be seen exactly how this thing is going to play out. My personal opinion is that they are still trying to make a case against him, a criminal case. You just don't indict the firm.
Well, there's one employee, I believe, that he had a conversation with on the telephone for 30 minutes and then either shorted or bought a lot of stock. And that
sold,
employee,
yeah, shorted and sold.
And that employee has not turned yet, but there's the possibility that he could turn. Is that true?
That is true. Now, we should point out there's a statute of limitations issue with that employee, but, you know, I mean, who knows? I mean, I keep hearing there are ways around the statute of limitations. And, yes, that is essentially true. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, and just one, they think Steve Cohen played dirty. And, like I said, he claims he hasn't, and I believe in innocence till proven guilty. One of his fund managers was trading drug stocks, Elon and Wyeth. There was, you know, he had a source, a doctor who had firsthand inside information on drug trials on those that were involved with those two drug stocks, and that the drug trials were turning negative. So they reversed. He basically alerted his supervisors that and had a conversation with Steve Cohen about reversing that trade, going short in a massive way. The feds before they actually pulled the trigger on that, you know, the feds know this. He had a 20-minute conversation with Steve Cohen. Now, what's interesting is that they didn't have his phone tapped. Okay,
right.
That was one of the instances where they didn't have the phone tapped. And the guy on the other end, on one side of the call, is this fund manager, former fund manager of SAC Capital, a guy named Matthew Martoma. He's not cooperating. He's gonna roll his dice, and they've indicted him, obviously, but he still is not cooperating. The other guy is Steve Cohen, who's not gonna incriminate himself, obviously. He says he's done nothing wrong. So there is a statute of limitations issue there, but I'll tell you, it's gonna be pretty messy when that thing goes to trial, because you would think that conversation is gonna be front and center. Exactly what was said during that conversation.
Well, I would agree that you're innocent until proven guilty. I agree with you on that, but that's one heck of a coincidence for a guy to get a phone call the day before the FDA says that this cancer drug does not work.
And, well, we don't know exactly what was said in that phone call.
Yeah.
With Cohen. Listen, I mean, you know, you're saying exactly what everybody at the Justice Department say. You know, they believe something was said that was illegal during that phone call.
Okay, Charles, we're running short on time, and
okay.
We do want to get to the second part of your thesis, which is that it's all well and good to nail insiders. I mean, they are cheating everybody else and getting fabulously wealthy, but what's it mean to me, the little investor? Is all this FBI investment of time and millions, hundreds of millions, no doubt, worth it to catch insiders when insider trading doesn't really affect anybody on the street, any little guy?
Right. Well, they say it would. They say that, you know, anytime you create an unlevel playing field, it's bad. I will tell you this, that if I'm selling a stock that you somehow buy and I have the inside information, right, you're going to buy that stock anyway. You know, you understand what I'm saying. I mean, your bet was made and you were going to lose money even if I was going to make money. The feds would say that's an unlevel playing field. I would tell you that's, you know, pretty close to not quite victimless, but it's not in the area of Bernie Madoff. And I would just say this. Why they spent so much time on this? The tracks went cold, so to speak, on all that financial crisis related stuff, which was pretty bad. I mean, the financial crisis and the risk, and whether the risk taking was legal, and whether the big banks were notifying the public in a proper way, that cost a lot of money. That cost a lot of jobs. That cost that created an economic implosion. That was bad stuff, but I'll tell you, they spent a lot of resources doing this while that stuff was running rampant.
So the economic crisis had nothing or practically nothing to do with insider trading, yet
zero.
Insider trading is where all the resources were going.
Just about zero. I mean, and neither did Bernie Madoff. That was just pure ripoff. You know what I'm saying?
And your point is that, or one of the points is that with insider trading, the playing field is not level, but nobody really gets bloodied like the $50 billion that was lost through the Madoff Ponzi scheme.
Yes, and just make it clear, I'm not saying insider trading is a good thing. You know,
no.
I'm not saying it should be totally legalized, but I'm saying think about where you're putting your resources. What is the worst economic crime out there that I've seen occur over the last since I've been covering Wall Street for the last sort of 20 years, 23 years or so? Bernie Madoff is up there. The financial crisis is up there. I mean, that's bad, bad stuff.
Well, you paint an interesting picture here. The term you use is sexy. I'd agree with you, where the wiretapped evidence of the tipsters,
right.
And I'm reading from your book here, it's not just cash but lobsters and real sex in exchange for their services. The hedge fund moguls on the other end of the line that are getting these tips, they are bragging about their exploits. And I think the point there is that Americans, they don't like cheaters, they don't like braggarts, especially when the cheaters are getting sex and lobsters when they're not.
I agree. Listen, I agree. I'm not saying it's there's nothing here. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's a complete waste of time, and you know, and it almost makes you sick how much they break. That, you know, these guys broke the law with abandon, right? The law was the law. It said, you know, you can't drive 55, and you drive 55 and 56, you get busted. That's the way it goes. These guys really didn't care. But I'm just saying when they're coming out and they're touting how they're, you know, cleaning up Wall Street, I would just say, Think about what they're doing here. I think that these were easy cases for them to make. I think they were done to appease the public's anger at Wall Street. I will tell you that the public is angered at Wall Street over stuff that had nothing to do with insider trading, and it's, you know, and that's just, I think that's a job of reporters to point out.
Yeah, and you've done a good job of that, Charles. Just talk a little bit about it's all very discouraging what you say about the little guy competing against hedge funds and
so on.
I mean pension funds and our 401ks. I mean, America lives and breathes on the stock market. So are we totally are we foolish to be in the market thinking we're going to make money?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, just don't compete. Don't trade against these guys. You know, when you buy Apple, right? You know, don't buy it because you think it's a tradable stock. You know, just because you hear on CNBC or some channel that you know Icon thinks, you know, it could go up to $500 a share. I mean, buy it because, you know, you think it's a company that's worth investing in for a few years. And, you know, mutual funds are a great way to do that. Index funds are a great way to do that. You know, buying stocks because they have good dividends and they're good companies and good management. I mean, that's what I'm, and that's why you watch what I do, and that's why you watch Fox Business. You know, if you want to trade against the big guys, you know, that's a fool's game. You know, I can't trade against the big guys. I know a lot about this stuff, and I still can't. I still don't know enough. Now, why can't I? Because I'm working all day, right? I mean, Steve Cohen is sitting in front of his computer all day, you know, looking at the markets. I'm working, and I think that's what people have to get out of their minds. If they think they can, you know, just take a break from work and log on to their E-Trade account and, you know, crank out some trades and compete against the masters of the universe just because they watch CNBC, they're absolutely wrong.
Well, before insider trading, these firms have access to the best research, and the playing field is not level even before insider trading.
That's the point you make, which is
absolutely correct.
Take insider trading out of it, and they still have a huge advantage over everybody in the world. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And you know, so I'm just saying that if you're gonna trade against the big guys, you know, you're going to lose, and that's what this book is essentially a warning that you know, that's essentially that's the playing field that you're up against.
Okay, Charles Gasparino, you see him on Fox Business Network and as a columnist here and there and elsewhere. Thanks for joining us, and that's a good way to end. Don't try to play against the big boys, but invest wisely. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks, Charles.
Thanks a lot. Now, we'll be back in just a minute to talk about popcorn and turning a little home business into a business. And next, let's take a look at the weather. We're in this late summer pattern now. We're in to scattered thunderstorms, mostly in the afternoons. Most of the chances are afternoons and evenings for thunderstorms all week long. High of 85 today, and then the low 80s the rest of the week. So pretty good week ahead, but watch for afternoon thunderstorms as they tend to blow up as the day wears on. So next, Vanessa and Michael Dobson with Pop Art Snacks, organic popcorn, coming up after this.
Park City Realty Group is proud to support KPCW. Park City Realty Group has provided real estate services to buyers and sellers since 2005. Our team shares local knowledge and insight with clients who value the Park City lifestyle. Knowledge plus hard work equals success. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Did you know that by shopping locally, you're supporting trail maintenance, our free bus system, and the many wonderful cultural and recreational opportunities in our community? When you shop or dine in Summit County, those dollars stay right here in Summit County. The Park City Chamber Bureau is pleased to support KPCW's locally grown radio show, Mountain Money. Remember, keep it local, keep it PC. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Back pain that is unbearable and takes over your life is devastating. Missing out on activities that are important to you can leave you feeling helpless. You don't have to travel far for competent, caring board certified help with your back pain. At Park City Specialty East, they're capable and ready to help with your pain management. Call today for an appointment at 435-658-7470. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Okay, welcome back to Mountain Money. We are here in the studio with Vanessa and Michael Dobson from Pop Art Snacks. They make and sell delicious organic gourmet popcorn. Well, they started out at the very beginning out of their own kitchen, and now they're selling this. They're selling their product everywhere. I mean, I was taking a look on the web last night, and you are in 20 fresh markets. You're in all of the Whole Foods in the area, Four Dan's. You're at the St. Regis at Deer Valley. This thing's really taken off.
It is. It is. We started the company just 2 years ago in our kitchen. And since then, we've, you know, obviously moved into a bigger facility where we make all of the popcorn in South Salt Lake.
Okay.
So
Michael, is popcorn popcorn, and it's what you put on it that makes it gourmet?
We use organic popcorn, and with all of the genetically modified corn that is being produced right now, it's very important for us that organic corn, and we use non-GMO ingredients, and just pure ingredients, I think, are what make our popcorn so special and the flavor so pronounced.
And I believe you say a happy cow equals healthy cheese, and you do not use growth hormone cheese.
No, we don't use any growth hormones in our cheese. There's just a lot of different things that are going on in the food industry. Michael was just mentioning the genetically modified foods, which, you know, there's a lot of outrage about right now. And then also there's a lot of hormones that are added to, or that cows are given so that they overproduce milk. And again, that's another thing that people are really upset about. And so we just want to be really responsible about how we source our ingredients, and you know, our cheese is hormone free. So
is this a niche no one else is filling? Are there other natural organic gourmet competitors out there?
There are some. There absolutely are. There aren't any that are doing flavors like ours, though. We've got a tandoori yogurt, so we use all Indian spices with a little tomato, garlic, yogurt. We have a Thai coconut curry, rosemary with Italian truffles. We've got some really fun out-of-the-box flavors that nobody else is doing.
So you started this in your kitchen. Were you just goofing around because you like popcorn, or did you have an idea that this could be a business?
I mean, we initially started it as just as an appetizer, you know, for parties and stuff, and people loved it. Vanessa and I both had completely different jobs. She was a director of a nonprofit. I did design and photography. And everyone kept telling us you had to do something. At the time, we lived in New York City, and you don't have a whole lot of time to pursue outside projects living in New York. So when we moved to Utah, we had a clean slate, and I had a friend that was doing a farmer's market and decided to give it a shot, and just started in our kitchen with some small little air poppers, and we would put them in Ziploc bags and sell them at farmers markets, and things kind of just snowballed from there.
And as it snowballed, you reached a point where you couldn't do it on the stovetop anymore or the countertop with an air popper, plus which there'd be some food regulations you'd have to deal with. So talk about how do you take a little hobby in your kitchen and scale it up to where you're complying with the law and getting it in big stores? Because getting shelf space is about the hardest thing for a food producer to do.
For sure. So our first starting budget when we were making it at home was $1,000. You know, we got all of our packaging ingredients, everything for $1,000. And then 3 months later, we wanted to take that next step. We wanted to get the packaging that would be shelf stable. And in order to do that, we needed to move into a commercial kitchen. And so with another small investment, we were able to get the first level of industrial equipment, better packaging, new labels, new branding, website, all of that stuff sort of happened just shortly after. So
how did you, that's more than the first $1,000. So at that point, did you dig deeper or did you get a loan? Because a lot of people, this is the stage at where a lot of people say, am I going to jump or am I just going to put it to the side? So how did you, did you study the market? Did you do some serious research and figure out this can go and this is worth getting a second mortgage on the home for?
Well, it was sort of a leap of faith, you know, from the response that we got at farmers markets. There was definitely more of a demand, and we were actually approached by a couple stores. One of the first ones being Rush at the market here said he wanted it in the store. And in order for us to do that, we had to get all of our nutritional facts and all of the details that are required to be in a store. And so we just dug a little deeper and took those first steps, and it all, you know, kind of built itself and just kept going and going. And at this point, it's about 87 stores we're in right now.
And what are your plans for the future?
You know, just continuing to make healthy, fun snack.
Do you want to break out of Utah?
Yeah. In the fall, we are going to be growing with Whole Foods into the Rocky Mountain region, which will be 5 states. So we're excited about that. But, you know, Utah is our home, and we're going to continue to develop new flavors and work on things here.
So it all starts with popcorn. Where does the organic popcorn get grown?
In Northern California. We actually had an opportunity to go and visit the farm. We were on our way to San Francisco, and just as we were driving, thinking, I think our organic farm is located right here. And so we called them, and they were able to give us a tour of their facility. And they do they're one of the biggest farms for organic popcorn, and also they do Lundberg's organic rice and some other organic grains there.
What is Monsanto's view of all of this? Aren't they trying to push everybody towards their seeds, which are not organic? Aren't they trying to bully everybody?
Yeah, to some degree, I'm sure. You know, we don't really interact with them too much.
The opinions expressed on this program are the views of JW, not
right.
necessarily the staff or management.
We love Monsanto.
but it is. I mean, that is, are you, I mean, clearly you're in Whole Foods where people assume a different standard of care and fewer chemicals and so on. So that is the niche that where there's going to be more demand, I presume you think, in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And Whole Foods is going to start requiring all GMO labeling on all of their foods in 5 years. So any ingredient that you have in your food will have to be identified as being genetically modified if it is. So
okay, well let's talk about the fun stuff. What all have you tried that works? And so what are some of the great flavors that you've come up with?
Currently, right now, we have 6 flavors that are in the stores. We have a rosemary with Italian black truffles, Thai coconut curry, white pepper parmesan, white cheddar jalapeno, tandoori yogurt, and a nori and sesame. And during the farmers markets, we test new flavors to see what the response is. We have a maple smoked sea salt. We have a honey lavender. We have a barbecue flavor. We have a horseradish sour cream and chives. And just fun flavors that are very savory. Our new sweetest flavors are a new process for us that we actually did a Kickstarter campaign for to raise the money for this campaign and just started making sweet flavors. So we have a maple smoked sea salt and a honey lavender.
So has anything bombed? Have you put ingredients in and just gone, ick?
Absolutely, yeah. We wanted so badly to have a wasabi and ginger flavor, and that one was pretty terrible. And
it wasn't good.
Actually, a lot of our flavors were terrible before we were able to perfect the recipes as well.
Do you have a professional test kitchen now, or are you still doing this at home, the experimenting?
No, we work out of a commercial kitchen. That's in South Salt Lake. And so we have all of our R&D done there, and all of our manufacturing is done there as well.
Larry and I like popcorn. We'd be glad to help.
we'll be unofficial testers.
Yeah. Also, well, I noticed on your website that you're also working to give back through charities and taking off on the killer song, I Shine When You Shine. You have a slogan, We Pop When You Pop.
Yes, we do. Coming from the nonprofit background, I really wanted to be able to tie pop art into doing something for charity. And the Killers, there is that line in the song, "We shine when you shine," and it's so true. I mean, when we're doing something great and we're able to help someone rise, then we feel like we're were able to help. And
so you were taking applications, I think, through the beginning of August. Did you select a charity to get behind?
Yeah, so we're still interviewing a couple, but we're super close to identifying who they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good.
Very good. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Vanessa and Michael Dobson. Another example of locals who started out with a hobby, and it turned out to be more than a hobby. It became a business.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And after these messages, we'll be back with Mary Robury, author of Grab and Go. You're listening to Mountain Money.
Tune in to KPCW every Tuesday morning at 9 to hear This Green Earth.
We'll cover environmental issues from local to global, from snowpack to giant squid,
geothermal energy to gray wolves,
and honeybees to sustainable chocolate. Brought to you by Jones Waldo Holbrook and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanities Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Yeah, welcome back to Mountain Money. Now we have Mary Robury in the studio, and she's the author of Grab and Go. And boy, if ever there was a demonstration of the need for knowing what it is you need to grab when you need to go in a hurry, it was the Rockport Estates fire just last week, where people just had to grab and go. And this is a book of essential documents, how to organize them, what to take, filling them out and having it good to go. And Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Just so you know, one of the reasons why I put this book together is because 2 years ago, I was involved in the Harriman fires. I was within a mile of all those fires coming over the mountain. And with my 25 years insurance experience, I felt the need to put this book together, Grab and Go Essential Document Organizer.
Okay, so let's talk about what you need to know. If you have to go in a hurry, what are the essentials?
Well, in my book, I outline 12 essential items that you should have in this important document organizer. Basically, you need to have your emergency contacts. You need to have all your family documentation, which could be anywhere from a birth certificate to your Social Security, your medical records, even your passport in that respect. One of the biggest things that I feel that you need in this grab and go document organizer is a picture or a CD of all the pictures of everything in your house. The situation with the Rockport people being in this fire, unfortunately, a lot of them had to leave their home, and they probably won't remember everything that was taken in their home.
So they're filling out their insurance claims, and they may forget the $400 Bose CD player that was
exactly
on the shelf. So you recommend taking pictures of every room in the house with all the contents.
Every room in the house and every content. Take your camera. Just go to town, anything and everything. Go down to Walgreens or Walmart, get those pictures developed, get the CD, and you have it in your grab-and-go document organizer. That way, when you have an emergency like the Rockport fire, you take it to your insurance guy and say, here, Mr. Insurance Man, file the claim for me, and here's my proof.
Now, everything is technology-based these days. Couldn't you just post all this to the cloud and not worry about grabbing anything, just knowing that it's all there?
Well, I have a few recommendations. Number one, this book is a workbook, and basically you can fill out the workbook, and you've got you should have this grab-and-go binder at home. But what you could do is you could scan all this information, put it on a thumb drive, and leave it in a security box at your bank or whatever the case may be, just in case you have an emergency like this fire. Because you never know if you're going to be away from home and you're going to lose everything. Ideally, it's nice to have this document organizer available at home with all your documents. But if you are away from home, you really need to have an extra copy.
I think it's important to point out also that if you are thinking of putting it on a thumb drive or putting it in some sort of safe or something like that, that a lot of these safes that say that they're fire retardant actually are not. And I remember just recently I was thinking about getting one of those bags that you put your documents into that can survive a fire. And I went and I looked at all the reviews, and everybody said, and this was five bags that I looked at, that every single one of them, when they brought them to a certain temperature, incinerated all, everything inside of it and did not actually protect the documents.
You're totally correct. So that's why I recommend not only having one copy of all your documents, you need to have a second copy. And, and it's not just for emergency situations. I mean, I had a girlfriend that had to go and get her a new license. You have to have your birth certificate. You have to have your Social Security card. Did she remember where they were at? Oh, no. She couldn't remember, the package that her mom had sent her. So she had to go and pay an extra $65 to get a copy of all these records. And not only that, the time. The time.
Yeah, the paper chase.
Exactly.
If you have to rebuild your life from
from scratch.
From birth.
Right. It would take probably years. I know with the Harriman fires, these people, it took them well over a year to even replace what they had from the beginning. Of course, you can never replace everything, but, it just took them forever to get it together. And just like you said, the paper chase, that is so correct with, the government, local, whatever the case may be. It's just such a time-consuming draining situation, especially when you're in the midst of having a crisis in your life. You do not want to be dealing with a paper chase. Having this at your fingertips is giving you peace of mind.
Well, the other thing would be just risk to yourself if you're trying to run through your house with a fire bearing down through the forest next door. You want to be putting some distance behind, not running through various rooms, gathering stuff.
That's totally correct. I have a 13-year-old, and my 13-year-old knows exactly where this binder is in our house in a case of emergency for her to grab and go.
Okay, so in addition to simple things you would think about, your personal finances and your insurance papers, what are some of the other things that should go into your binder?
Anything to do with trust and wills, obviously, and this is another factor we need to look at. One of us could be on the road today and die. Does our spouse or our significant other know where our personal information is? With that documentation, my husband would be able to know where all of my financial information is, or my child, whatever the case may be. I also go into pets, and they had a lot of people that were worried about their animals with the Rockport. Pets do get displaced as well, and our dog has a chip in him, and I have the documentation on his chip in my binder. And so, and then going on, I talk about funeral arrangements a lot.
Yeah, you're thinking worst case scenarios here. You say the funeral arrangements, such as you may have them, ought to be in this too.
That is correct.
So it's cradle to grave. You need your birth certificate and your plans for your demise.
That is correct. Everybody has their own wishes of the way they want to go when we leave this world. I was talking to my mom. My mom wants to be cremated. And I was like, I didn't know that, and so talking it out through, with yeah. her, I know what her last wishes are and so forth. And then the last section in my binder talks about documentation when it comes to your passwords and your computer information. Because if your computer is gone, your passwords are gone. you know, because your with your main computer, that's where all your passwords are saved. So it's important to have that written down and kept in a safe spot. That way, you know, in a situation, you can remember your computer, your password to your bank, because you're going to be in the midst of all the other worries, and you would have peace of mind of having that password.
And the other thing you may not think of in a crisis is if you lose access to your finances, you think we should have a wad of cash in this folder too.
That is correct. And one of the sections of the binder, you know, it's important to have small bills, not big bills. You know, and I'll give you an example of that. Let's say we have a major crisis. You go to the gas station and you need gas and you have a $100 bill. Do you think that that person's going to give you change for that $100 bill? Oh, no. Not in the midst of a crisis. You need to have ones, fives, tens, and maybe even 20s in there. You know, a couple $100s, if not $500, that would be great, depending on your family size.
If I put one of these together, I wouldn't have the discipline. I'd say, geez, the pizza guy's here. And I'd go in there and grab $25.
It could be an emergency situation.
Well, you know,
you're really
pizza.
Hungry.
Yeah, that's true.
Talking pizza.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have a pizza delivery guy in the middle of a crisis, though.
Oh, you never know.
That's
you
great.
Never know.
So the workbook is mostly not blank pages, but pages for you to fill out. With all the numbers. Now, is there any risk that this is information that you need to then very, very much protect?
Well, that's my point. You need to put it in a special binder. And on that binder, you do not put your family's name at the back of that binder, because if somebody comes in to rob you, they're going to see Williams and they're going to go, oh, that looks like a good binder I could, you know, go for right away.
Sure.
You need to have a special code on it in a secure spot in your house that maybe, like I said, one of your children would know specifically where that binder is available. The grab-and-go essential document organizer is 117 pages, and it's perforated pages. Like you said, you fill them out. You take them out of the binder or the workbook, and then you put them in the plastic sheets that add to a binder with each section.
So we're speaking with Mary Robury, author of Grab and Go, the essential document organizer. Is this available on Amazon?
It's available on Amazon on ebooks and workbook form. It's also available at Barnes & Noble, Deseret Book, Siegel Book.
Dolly's bookstore right here.
I'd have to check that out, to be honest with you.
Right.
I'd prefer it to be.
you should stop on your way.
This was published locally by Cedar Fort Publishing, so it's probably more readily available in the region here, at least for starters. Right?
That is correct.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for joining us. Mary Robury, author of Grab and Go Organizer. What's your background? You're an accountant? Or
no, actually, I've got 25 years insurance
That's
experience.
Right.
And I've been very involved with our emergency preparedness in our state and our local area in Harriman.
Okay. So you live and breathe this stuff, and you see what happens to people when they don't have it.
That is totally correct.
Okay. Well, thanks very much
for joining us.
Thank you.
And
very
we'll
much.
Be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this. Welcome back to Mountain Money. Winding down the time, I want to thank our guests. First of all, Charles Gasparino, JW. We had he's kind of a rock star of business journalism. The guy writes bestsellers. He's on TV. Was on CNBC. Moved to Fox Business, and you'll notice he worked in all his digs during our interview at CNBC.
Yeah, he did. You know, it was a fascinating book with really good anecdotal stories.
And beyond Charles Gasparino, we had Vanessa and Michael Dobson, and we always love to feature locals who just started out with a hobby and were able to turn that hobby and passion into a going business. And they're in, what'd you say, 80-something stores, so great success for them. And Mary Roberry just joined us with the Grab and Go organizer, very timely given the fact that people are all across the West are fleeing wildfires. I also want to thank our great guests, Park City Realty Group, or great sponsors, I mean, great Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, San Francisco Design, the Park City Chamber, and Prudential Real Estate, and also Albion Financial. Thanks to you for supporting us throughout the year. And JW, thanks very much for filling in for Doug.
My pleasure.
And Doug will be back next week, and you'll be back on Thursday.
On Thursday with Community Voices.
Very fine. Enjoy that, and enjoy the rest of the week. We're going to go to music now after NPR.